Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. We just heard harpist Edna Phillips perform Claude Debussy's The Girl with the Flaxen Hair. Well, we have a really fascinating story to tell today, written by a very, very fine writer. This is a story about Edna Phillips and the Philadelphia Orchestra, written by Mary Sue Welsh. And we'd like to welcome Mary Sue to Crossover. I have been enamored just listening to the little tales that you're telling me before the interview. So I guess we should talk about the reason you're here is because you wrote a wonderful, I guess it's a biography, is that correct? About Edna Phillips, who was, she was first harp with the Philadelphia Orchestra for how many years?
Well, 16, but a few years extra as the soloist when they needed her after. But from 1930 to 1946.
Okay. Now, the big thing is that she was a woman. And, of course, they never had a woman in the all-male orchestra. So tell us a little bit about how this whole idea of writing about her came to you.
Okay. Well, and Edna was not only just the first woman in the Philadelphia Orchestra, she was the first woman principal player in any major orchestra. And it was just unheard of at that time to have a woman.
What year are you talking
1930.
About?
1930. She joined in 1930. And she was a little terrified about it, really terrified, not because she was a woman, but just because she hadn't had sufficient training and background to take a major position.
Well, I can understand I think you can still feel that way, but the whole aspect of being a woman, we don't talk too much about it now because we've achieved such, we've taken big strides into, getting rid of that problem, I think. But certainly in those years, I guess women, they didn't play in orchestras, isn't that right?
No, not allowed. They had all women orchestras. That was how a woman could get a job in a professional orchestra, was to play with all women, because they just weren't considered worthy. They didn't, it was terrible. The men kept them out.
And they had to be pretty. I think I remember as a child, there was the Phil Spitalny. That was an all-woman orchestra, and they played popular music. But I think you had to be very, very pretty. And of course, that was all part of it. So it was definitely discrimination. Certainly not only race, but also just the fact that you are a woman.
No, it was. And she had to work for her. She was very wily, though. She was smart in that she avoided a lot of confrontations. And Stokowski would put her on the spot several times, made several passes at her. But she was able to just slide by it because she was kind of witty.
Yeah, well, tell the audience a little bit about what you told me in terms of where she initially started in New York. Isn't that right?
Right. Well, she went, her teacher, she picked up the harp later in life. For someone that goes to the top with a classical instrument to begin it at 18 is very late. And she had studied piano all her life, but at 18 she picked up the harp. And her teacher, Florence Whiteman, was a wonderful harpist, but also a young woman, too. Edna, at this point, point was 20 and her teacher was 24. And that was in 1927. And Florence got a job in a brand new movie palace, the Roxy Theater.
Mm-hmm. In New York, okay.
New York in Manhattan, right off Broadway. And she took Edna along with her as her second harpist because she didn't want to be one woman on her own. So Edna got up there, but it was a very tough life because they played seven shows a week, four times a day, and in between shows they had to hang around in the bottom of the Roxy Theater, down way down the third basement. And it was a little hectic, and she finally left after 6 weeks because she couldn't be on her own. I mean, she was afraid she'd get caught. So,
well, the thing is this, even then, at that point, that was unusual, I guess, to have a woman harpist, isn't that
right?
Yes.
Even in a theater orchestra. Yes, it was the first one. And so, but anyway, she went back vowing never again to go into an all-male orchestra. That was not for her. And she went to the Curtis Institute, where she eventually studied under Carlos Salcedo, who was a very big character.
And he loved women as well, and he demanded that they dress up for their lessons. I think they had to wear hats and gloves and high heels. Isn't that true?
They did. Yeah. He picked out Edna's clothes. He went to Bonwit Teller with her.
Oh, my.
When she got in the orchestra, because what was a woman to wear? There'd never been a woman in the orchestra.
That's really quite amazing.
Yeah, he was something. And Edna said he reminded her of Hercule
Poirot.
He was a very much of a dandy himself.
Yes, himself, and
yes.
A very, very wonderful harpist as well.
Yes.
Carlos Salcedo, who was head of the department at Curtis. So Edna wound up.
Oh, yes. So he finally said, after she'd studied there for 2.5 years, I want you to audition for the Philadelphia Orchestra. And she said to him, no, I'd be like a ewe lamb in a lion's den. I don't know what. And she was absolutely not going to do it. But he talked her into it, and mainly he said, you'll be playing in the, first of all, the men of the Philadelphia Orchestra are not like those Roxy Romeos who were chasing you around up in New York.
But that's what he said.
That's what he said, yes. Anyway, so he kind of talked her into it and talked her into it. He said, and besides, you're going to be playing the second harp position, and I'll be here to teach you at Curtis, and you have a wonderful first, Vincent Finelli is a wonderful principal, and he'll show you the ropes, and it'll be good. And then, sadly, Vincent Finelli had a problem with his hand. And after she had auditioned for Stokowski, he never told anybody, but he said, no, Finelli, you can't come back. Your hand is, you're not playing
you're not
effectively.
You're not being able to play, yeah.
Yes. And so without telling anybody, he appointed her to the principal harp position, which was very, very demanding.
Demanding, and of course, she was one of the first or the first.
The first. There was no dressing room for her. There was nothing.
When Mary Sue Welsh was gathering material for her book, One Woman in 100, she spoke with Edna Phillips, and she spoke about her experience with Stokowski and the making of Fantasia.
Well, Stokowski announced to us that we were going to make a very unusual film with Walt Disney and with his wonderful animated people and music provided by the Philadelphia Orchestra for a film. It's going to be called Fantasia. And the records and all the recording sessions would be in Philadelphia, and then they would go to Hollywood where the animated cartoons or whatever you call them would be there, and they would insert from time to time a dummy orchestra, which would, in those days, there was no other way to do it. They had to be silent, but look as though they were really making the music, but we were making the music. And the first thing that happened was, on the stage, there were a number of men placed among us on the stage with little square boxes that looked like a kind of aquarium boxes, and they were beaters of some kind. I don't know what that was establishing. And there were wires and wires and wires strung all over the floor of the Academy stage, and then going down the steps to the basement, and crawling down the steps, they were attached to various instruments down below the stage. Uh-huh. So it was a great deal of I would say, electrical mechanism going on in the course of the sessions. And I had, just to cheer me up, I think at the beginning, they took a picture of Walt Disney and myself, which I unfortunately did not keep. Oh. But in any event, what happened was, they suddenly discovered that my harp was scratching my knees. In other words, when I pulled the harp back to play, it rubbed against the wool of my skirt or the material of my skirt, and that was picked up on the sound.
Ah.
So what do you think they did to me? They banished me to the pit.
Oh, dear.
And there I sat, 100 miles, it seemed, from the orchestra itself, which was miles above me on the stage. Mm-hmm. Stokowski on his platform, and that was still higher. And I was absolutely abandoned in the pit by myself.
How could you?
And to coordinate with them from that distance was really a very hard task.
Uh-huh.
So I never forgot this strange interlude with Fantasia.
Who would have thought that we'd be able to hear Edna Phillips describe her experiences with Stokowski and the Philadelphia Orchestra in Hollywood when they were making Fantasia and her performance of The Waltz of the Flowers, which we just heard. Of course, there is a big harp cadenza in the beginning of that, and then, of course, the lovely waltz. So she was terribly important, but she was far, far away. Was she the first in the whole country? Would you say, were there other orchestras that had female harpists at that time?
There could have been. I think in San Francisco, let's say of the major orchestras, absolutely the first principal player.
Okay.
Eugene Ormandy's first wife
was a harpist,
and she did play in the Philharmonic early on, but she just came. She was not on the official roster. She was a second harpist, so that she did precede her.
Okay, so this was really she was breaking ground, literally.
Definitely, because if the orchestra was not as picky as the highest orchestra, a woman might be able to sneak in, but never at the
top. Because a harp is a solo. It's not that you play solo all the time, but it isn't the only one there. And then perhaps you have a second one if the score calls for it. But you're that. You're it.
Right.
And if it doesn't happen with you, it doesn't happen. Uh-huh. So it's quite a responsibility and frightening because of the top. You know, this is one of the great orchestras at that time. I think was considered one of the great ones.
In 1929, Rachmaninoff called it the finest orchestra the world has ever heard.
Yes,
and that was pretty scary.
Him, that's quite
yes.
a compliment. So in that case, I think it's very demanding, and of course the repertoire is demanding. There are some things that are less demanding than others, but of course that's for every instrument. But you are it. You're out there alone.
Mm-hmm.
And so this really took a lot of guts mm-hmm. on her part. Now, in the book, you call this One Woman in 100. And she was, how many female harpists were there in the country at that time? Do you have any idea?
I don't. I mean, I know Carla Salzedo and probably Grandjeunet up at Juilliard were turning out. But really, the harp wasn't even that respected. Edna at first thought, I don't want to play those little, she called them mm-hmm. by the fountain songs.
Well, a lot of them were.
Yes.
And they were pretty, and they were salon
yes.
music.
Exactly.
And of course, that was very necessary. But I also think the orchestral music was very, very different. And as you told me later, she was responsible throughout her tenure for commissioning many, many works. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little
bit? Well, this was started around 1938, 39, 40 in there. And she and her husband, Sam Rosenbaum, decided, she said, there's just not enough work for the harp, enough compositions for the orchestra.
Now, would this have been orchestral or
always,
just in general?
She always went for orchestral music, and mm-hmm. she felt that. She just became an orchestral harpist. And she, not that she didn't play solo, but she wanted it to be brought there. And she would sometimes make compositions for small orchestras, but she still wanted more works available. And so she did that. She also went over the best, in a sense, most expensive composer she could find, because she wanted it to get noticed. She didn't want, she wanted to make sure that the harp would be noticed, that these pieces would be noticed.
Or there would be repertoire, because what you had was largely from the French school. That's pretty much what you had.
That's it, yes.
And some Baroque, perhaps, that wasn't even originally written for the harp. So mm-hmm. So her timing was certainly at the time when you had your impressionistic music also, not exactly at that moment, but that certainly that's when Debussy and Ravel brought in all of these beautiful works that featured the harp in some way or other. A centerpiece of the harp repertoire written for flute, clarinet, and strings, Maurice Ravel's Introduction and Allegro. In this performance, Edna Phillips is the harpist. Unfortunately, we have no personnel information on this vintage archival recording. Tell us a little bit about your background, Mary Sue Welsh. You are a writer.
Right.
And why did you decide to write this book?
Well, I worked with Edna back in the 1980s for about 10 years. She was chair of the board of the Basically Bach Festival of Philadelphia, and I was executive director. And I would hear all her stories, and I was very impressed with her. And then I would be taking her out. She was often asked to give speeches and all. And then later on, she decided she wanted to write about her experiences. And it was first going to be a memoir. And she said, when I tell young women nowadays about being the first woman in the orchestra, their eyes glaze over. They don't think it's a big deal.
Yes.
But boy, they didn't know what it was like. And she wanted to tell that. She wanted to tell her experiences inside the orchestra. And, and so she wanted me to help her.
I see. So the book really chronicles her, the very beginning of her interest in the harp, I guess, and her training. And then, of course, her entering the orchestra. I mean, that's one woman in 100 is right. And how many people were in the orchestra? I guess so somewhere close to 100, I suppose.
That was a headline from a newspaper review of her. And I think this one was in 1933, and it said Edna Phillips is one woman in 100. When the at least she is when the serried ranks of Stokowski's men are drawn up to the public's gaze on the stage of the Academy of Music. But that was just from a headline in the Philadelphia Record.
Well, you wrote something, and of course, I'm a Grangini student,
yes.
So it's kind of interesting. Carlos Salcedo, you said, lowered his voice and beckoned Edna to lean closer so that he could tell her how much Stokowski liked the method for playing the harp that he had developed. That's the Salcedo method.
Yes.
And he said, don't you see, Edna, when my students take positions in great orchestras like the Philadelphia, more and more people will learn about the Salcedo method. They will see how important it is. So he was really very, very interested in promoting what he considered Definitely. Another method of playing the harp. And it was. He was of the French school as well as Grangeny, the Regnier school from the Paris Conservatory. Mm-hmm. And he developed something different,
right.
which I, you know, that could be a discussion for another time.
Really, yes. They were, and they said that they were rivals, the Juilliard students like
yes.
you who had Grangeny and the Curtis students who followed Salzedo.
Well, it's a slightly different, it's different to some degree, but I think everyone says that their method is the one
exactly,
that's better.
Exactly.
So I think you probably have that in every instrument, but the harp is really, they're so scarce. And still a number of harpists are. There aren't that many. You have at least one in an orchestra, if you're lucky, and two, of course, in a major symphony orchestra. So you also said that she commissioned many works. So can you tell us a little bit about which?
Well, because she felt that there were not enough pieces written that utilized the harp as it really could be.
You mean it's a solo instrument with accompaniment?
Like a concerto, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Giving the harp its due. And so she and her husband set out at the end of the 1930s, and in the 40s and 50s it even went on. And she commissioned works from the best composers she could find for the harp.
And some
and
of them were?
Some of them were. Well, the famous is Ginastera. And, how can you say it again? Cerebriere.
Yes. Jose Cerebriere, who was a conductor, but he also was a composer. Is that right?
Right. And,
well, the Ginastera is really a marvelous work.
Yes. She said it's a masterpiece. And it really, when you listen to it, you'll be startled. It's startling.
Well,
and
it was also new. It's a different approach. Of course, it's more contemporary
mm-hmm.
and very difficult as well. And what were some of the other ones that she commissioned?
Berezovsky. She commissioned a work it's a concerto for harp and orchestra. She tried to get Carlos Chavez to write a work for her, and they did advance some money, but I don't know, it somehow got a little lost. Paul Zonka, Norman De La Gioia, Peggy Glanville Hicks,
yes. mm-hmm.
Alexei Hayev, Ernst Krennick, Harl MacDonald.
Well, Harl MacDonald, I think we do know very, very well. And I think she made a recording of that, one of his works
that
is still around.
Yes, the Childhood Suite.
Yes, it's really charming.
Yes,
very charming.
Yes, yeah, that was the first one she commissioned.
Yeah. Another very important work for solo harp and orchestra is Claude Debussy's Danse Sacrée et Profane, the Sacred and Profane Dances. We listen now to a recording that was made in 1931 with the Philadelphia Orchestra, Leopold Stokowski conducting, and Edna Phillips, harpist as soloist. We've just heard the Danse Sacrée et Profane, the Sacred and Profane Dances of Claude Debussy, performed by harpist Edna Phillips with the Philadelphia Orchestra, conducted by Leopold Stokowski. I see,
yes.
The point is, though, that, I mean, in order to commission a work, you have to pay the composer.
Right.
And I guess she took that on. As
yes,
part of
yes.
her.
She had a wonderfully supportive husband. Sam Rosenbaum, on his own, deserves a book. He was 19 years older than she was, and he was a vice president of the board of the Philadelphia Orchestra. She didn't meet him until after she'd been there for a year, and then she met him on the stage of the Academy of Music, and they were doing a dedication. This shows you how immersed she was in her music. Every year they have the Philadelphia Award, and it's for a prominent Philadelphian who's done so much for the city. And they were talking about this Cornelius McGillicuddy and what he had done the year before. And Cornelius McGillicuddy and his baseball team, that wonderful baseball team. And Edna was getting more and more upset because she thought, you know, that's Connie Mack. And why are they calling him Cornelius McGillicuddy? So after that concert and after all the fol-de-rol, she was talking to this lovely man in the back with, so she always talked about his blue eyes and his wonderful sense of humor. And he very gently told her that Cornelius McGillicuddy was Connie Mack. And she got to know him, and 2 years later they got married.
Yeah. One way of getting right. married.
Well, and it was very interesting because he was on the board of directors. And that sometimes put her in an awkward position because Stokowski was always fighting with the board of directors. So,
she had a precarious position on, you know, on many levels, I would imagine.
Yes.
And also, so how did she meet him? He was on the board.
He was on the board of directors. Yes. Actually, she also met him at a luncheon, end of year luncheon, mm-hmm. and she met him there. And then just that summer after she had joined, they began the Robin Hood Dell concerts.
Okay,
which were that I'm kind of forgetting the name, but it was the first concert that was summer concert because the players were only paid 32. Weeks a year. And as her husband said, they seemed to want to eat, and their families wanted to eat all year round. So they came up with this idea for the Philadelphia Summer Concerts, and Edna had to play there. And the only board member that was very active in it was Sam Rosenbaum. So she would see him. He would be there trying to get those concerts off the ground. And then they became the Robin Hood Dell, and then that became the Mann Center. Yes.
And I don't quite know whether that was before Tanglewood, I think, because...
No, I don't know.
I'm not
that.
Sure for the Boston Symphony, but as you say, this was an effort to have musicians working at least almost all year round.
Yes.
And that was very important. Well, I just want to say, Mary Sue Welsh, that it's been a joy speaking with you. And this One Woman in 100 is available. It's in hardcover.
Yes, and ebooks.
And ebooks as well. That's what I was going to ask. Mm-hmm. So it's One Woman in 100, Edna Phillips and the Philadelphia Orchestra by Mary Sue Welsh. Is there a publisher that you have to know about?
The University of Illinois Press, and they have a wonderful series of Music in American Life. And it's all sorts of music, but musicians who've made a difference.
Well, thank you so much for coming and telling us. I mean, we probably have gotten maybe 1/100th of the information that's in this book. It's very, very interesting to learn the background of just what was going on in the musical scene here in Philadelphia. And then, of course, also the early years of breaking the ranks mm-hmm. for a woman in the major orchestras. And thanks so much for coming to Crossover.
Thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed being here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We conclude today with a performance of Claude Debussy's Prelude to the Afternoon of a Faun with the Philadelphia Orchestra, Leopold Stokowski conducting, featuring harpist Edna Phillips. I'm Jill Pasternak. Until next time.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Hattie, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated. Thanks for listening.